life and to give it in full. In America, I have...
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you live tonight from the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden in New York City. We're going to be talking this hour about the long shadow of the Iraq War over this campaign season. Right now at the podium in Madison Square Garden is North Carolina Senator Elizabeth Dole. Let's listen.
Without activist judges trying to strip the name of God from the Pledge of Allegiance, from the money in our pockets, and from the walls of our courthouses. The Constitution guarantees freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. The right to worship God isn't something Republicans invented, but it is something Republicans will defend. We believe in the compassionate life of service. Our enemies in this war on terror say that America is selfish, self-centered, self-obsessed. They do not know America. As the president said, if you want to help in the war on terror, love your neighbor. Love your neighbor. Americans will cross town or cross the globe to help people they've never met and will never see again. So, yes, if neighbors are hungry, we feed them. If a storm named Charlie or Francis strikes, we help them. Serving others isn't something Americans invented, but it is a calling we'll always accept. These are just some of the principles that guide our party. Some may call them values. Others may call them virtues. I like to think of them simply as the truths my parents and grandparents taught me. Despite what you might hear on the news, they are the shared truths of the American people. They are true from sea to shining sea, from my hometown of Salisbury, North Carolina, to the south side of Chicago, from Little Havana to Bob Dole's Russell, Kansas, from Madison Square Garden to the Space Needle, from Crawford, Texas to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
And there is Senator Elizabeth Dole, wife of Bob Dole, who's was smiling broadly in the convention hall tonight as the Republican National Convention rolls on. The big banner tonight is People of Compassion, and we'll hear a lot more about that from Laura Bush later on tonight. Bill Frist is coming up. Arnold Schwarzenegger, another moderate, is speaking tonight. We are looking in this hour at the war in Iraq, its impact on the Republican Party, its impact on this campaign season. Earlier this summer, Francis Fukuyama, the author of The End of History and the leading neoconservative thinker, made headlines with a 12-page magazine piece dismantling the neocon arguments behind the Iraq War. He had initially favored the invasion of Iraq. His public about-face showcased what seems to be a growing rift among some neocons who were the most vocal advocates of the war, and they aren't the only ones having second thoughts about Iraq. As the death toll mounts and the conflict shows no signs of abating, the American intervention in Iraq has emerged as the most controversial and globally consequential decision of George W. Bush's White House. Here at the Republican Convention, the word from the podium is that Iraq was a brave, visionary, glorious choice by the president. But step outside the hall, and even in the back hallways of Madison Square Garden, and that is passionately debated. Tonight, On Point, the long shadow of Iraq and its impact on the race for the White House. Did you hear John McCain and Rudy Giuliani praise the president on Iraq last night? Is Iraq working for the GOP in New York this week? Is it working politically in the country at large? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. On Point reporter Audie Cornish joins me here at the Madison Square Garden right now. She's been talking with Republican delegates today. Audie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So you've been out there, you've been talking with the faithful, and of course the delegates here are all polls indicate more conservative even than the normal Republican. But what's the word you're hearing on Iraq, the situation in Iraq, the American engagement with Iraq?
Well, they are very, very, very supportive of the president, of his decision, of the way that he handled it. I didn't talk to any delegates who criticized the way that the president went about gathering support in terms of going over to Iraq. And most seem to feel that, at best, the war and the war on terrorism are intertwined, and that the president did the right thing by going overseas with the war. I actually had a person say to me, I'd rather that we fight this war in the streets of the Middle East than in Chicago or L.A. or New York. And so the attitude was really that we did the right thing by going forward and going overseas and by taking the bull by horns. That was the phrase that I heard.
So this is really the message we heard last night as well from McCain and Giuliani. You're hearing it echo right back from the crowd.
Yes, yes. The crowd may not agree with those two candidates on every issue in the platform, mm-hmm. but when it comes to the war in Iraq and the war on terror, they definitely do.
And did you hear, Audie, any concern from the delegates here about how it's playing outside this hall, about how it's playing with those critical swing voters that the president needs to win this election?
Well, most people, I said, thought that it would be naive to say that there wouldn't have been problems, and that perhaps people are being overcritical and were themselves critics maybe were underestimating what needed to be done. And I had several people say that the war in Iraq was a beginning and not an end, and that they're not surprised at the hostilities that have continued, and that it's a consequence of fighting the war on terrorism and of stabilizing the region. More importantly, they felt that they understood the pain of families who have troops overseas. And I spoke to a few veterans and a few mothers of sons who were at war, and they said that is a part of the sacrifice. And so a lot of people, they were mostly on board with troop deployment and all these sorts of things. And they're prepared for the cost of war is what they tried to explain.
So delegates, the ones you talked to at least today, solid for the president when it comes to Iraq and the president's interpretation of what's going on in Iraq. Audie Cornish, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Audie Cornish is covering the convention this week for WBUR and On Point. We're looking tonight at the Iraq factor in this campaign season. I'm joined now here in Madison Square Garden by David Sanger, New York Times Washington correspondent. David, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks.
And Michael Hirsch, Newsweek senior editor covering international affairs. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
David Sanger, first to you. There has been this riffle of debate we've heard within the neocon community in the last few weeks over the effort in Iraq and the deep thinking behind it. Can you describe that for us? What was Francis Fukuyama getting at? He sort of went head-to-head with Charles Krauthammer, the conservative columnist. Is this just two guys having it out in public, or is there a wider rift?
Well, there is a wider rift, and this is the rift that comes really from the fact that there was no swift victory. And I don't think that you would be seeing this happen if we have not been through 17-month insurgency. You would not see the second guessing. Last Thursday, we had a relatively rare moment to interview President Bush down in New Mexico, and I asked him some about the post-war planning, and this was the interview in which he first said that they had made a miscalculation.
Right, the word that echoed around the world for a few days.
It did indeed, and he meant this in the narrowest way. He was not making any of the kind of arguments that Fukuyama or anybody else in Fukuyama's camp is. He was saying that the United States won such a quick military victory that there was no way to anticipate that the rest of the Iraqi forces would melt back into the cities and into the towns and then reemerge as an insurgency. And then,
what did he call it, the catastrophic success or something like that?
In a different interview, I think with mm-hmm. Time, he mm-hmm. used the catastrophic success. It's also a phrase that you hear out of the Pentagon and the NSC a fair bit. So where does that leave you? It leaves you with a president who has said, basically, this entire adventure was worth it because the benefits of getting rid of Saddam Hussein, the opportunity to bring peace to a broader, or at least liberties to a broader part of the Middle East, overcome any of the difficulties of getting through the war. And many other conservatives have said to me, look, you go back in the history of World War II, it wasn't all pretty. We made mistakes, and, you know, that happens in war.
And there was controversy about even going to war for a long time.
There was. I think that the argument that the neocons are making is a much more fundamental one. Mm-hmm. And it gets to this split, long-time split within the Republican Party about the degree to which the United States should be involved in ousting dictators and the degree to which they should be involved in rebuilding nations and basically staying out on long-term nation-building assignments.
And this not just a neocon split at this point, but of course you've got another wing, kind of the Pat Buchanan wing, that doesn't like it either, describes it as Wilsonian and not the right role
right.
for Republicans.
Now, the reality is this is not the split George Bush is worried about, mm-hmm. because that crowd, they're all going to vote for him by and large anyway. But there is, in the moderates, and of course among Democrats, but in these swing voters, a lot of second-guessing about this war right now, and we're all trying to figure out to what degree does that versus the economy play in places like Ohio.
Michael Hirsch, you heard last night how John McCain and Rudy Giuliani described this, and they lined up absolutely solid with the president, saying this, really drawing the same line the president's drawn between terrorism and the war in Iraq, putting them together, saying, as David Sanger heard, you know, we had to, or Audie heard, we had to take it there to the streets of Baghdad so it wouldn't be in the streets of New York. How do you think that line is selling? Is Iraq actually working at this point for the president? Does it help the Republicans portray him as a man of action, resolute, visionary? Or are the reports coming back from Iraq of all the trouble there, whittling away more than he's gaining?
Well, it's difficult to say how Iraq is working, just qua Iraq, as you know, alone. I mean, the whole point of the Bush approach is to wrap Iraq into the larger war on terror and to say it was all necessary. I frankly think that, you know, the best thing George W. Bush has going for him now vis-a-vis Iraq is John Kerry, and the fact that Kerry, you know, has not really taken a strong stand on any aspect of the Iraq issue, you know, whether to have gone in, how it was done. I mean, his rhetoric has remained vague, and I think that, you know, all those putative swing voters out there are still waiting to hear some clarity from him. And I think, from what I've heard, the Bush people are actually quite happy.
So he hasn't laid
about
out another clear poll,
that's right.
And that's given George Bush an opening. Michael Hirsch, stand by. David Sanger, we're going to go to the floor for a moment. I want to say goodbye to you and thank you to you first for coming. David Sanger, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
David Sanger, New York Times, Washington correspondent. On the convention floor right now, you can hear George P. Bush, nephew of the president, son of Jeb, a Mexican-American mother, Florida governor as father. Let's listen. His grandparents are listening very closely in the hall right now. George P. Bush.
Strengthen accountability and improve student achievement in every school in America. It's based on a simple but revolutionary idea that every child can learn. And every child deserves our best effort to help them succeed. President Bush has provided the largest education funding increase in history, and we are already seeing impressive results. For example, in the great state of Florida, since we started testing students, we are above the national average in reading, at the national average in math, and among the top 10 states in writing. Another way President Bush has fostered the American dream is through tax relief. Letting people keep more of their own money helps them pay the mortgage, save for college, or even start their own business. When small business owners keep more of their earnings, they are more likely to expand and add new jobs to this economy. This, in turn, allows others to earn a paycheck and support their own families. Thanks to President Bush's leadership, more people than ever own their own home. And more than half of minorities are now homeowners, the highest level in American history. The President's American Dream Down Payment Act really is helping people overcome one of the biggest hurdles to being a homeowner, finding the money for a down payment. Since the President announced his plan in 2002, more than 1.6 million minorities have become homeowners for the first time.
George P. Bush at the podium, a next-generation Bush nephew of the president. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Not be forced to relinquish the American dream in retirement. For those now in or near retirement, President Bush will make sure to uphold the promise of Social Security.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you live from Madison Square Garden tonight, where George P. Bush, a next-generation Bush, has just wrapped up a speech with quite a bit of Spanish. His mother is Mexican-American. His father is Jeb Bush, governor of Florida. As we watch the action on the floor tonight, we are talking about the Iraq factor in this year's presidential campaign and how it's shaping up for the Republicans, the Democrats, and the country. You can join the conversation tonight. Is Iraq working for the GOP in New York this week? Is it working in the country at large for the GOP? Despite the death toll, the dollar cost, the insurgency, are the Republicans making Iraq a plus for the Bush campaign? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to hear a lot of voices in this hour, but I want to turn right now for a few minutes to General Merrill McPeak. He was Air Force Chief of Staff during the first Gulf War. He joins us by telephone from New York. General McPeak, thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
We're doing very well. General McPeak, you were in the thick of the first Gulf War a decade and more ago under George Bush, the senior. You were a member of Veterans for Bush in the year 2000, supporting George W. Bush for the presidency. You have turned against the president as a result of the prosecution of the war in Iraq. Why?
Well, not so much the prosecution as the preparation. I spent the better part of 40 years in uniform trying to enhance the position of the United States, improve our prestige, our clout, and expand our influence. And as I watched this administration kind of fritter away all of that in its kind of clumsy, careless preparation for the war in Iraq, I became alarmed. In fact, I changed my registration. I'm now a registered independent in Oregon. And I really am angered and upset by the fact that we are in a much worse position in Iraq today than the administration promised us, and a much worse position than we needed to be had they been competent to the task.
But, General McPeak, you know that is by no means the message coming out of Madison Square Garden tonight. Last night, Rudy Giuliani and John McCain both lavishing praise on the president for his decision to go into Iraq, making the case that America is stronger because Iraq has been made a battlefront in the war on terror, which they're tying it into. What did you think of those speeches?
Well, first of all, I guess those two guys are in politics, and I am not. So they can't believe the evidence of their eyes, and I can't. You know, I'm open. The little data hits my optic nerve and penetrates all the way to the brain, and I see what's happening. They do not. Our worldwide approval is at an all-time low in my lifetime. The administration said we'd be down to 30,000 troops by this summer. So nothing has happened the way predicted here, but in politics you have to call that a victory. It's cost us upwards of 1,000 people that it didn't need to cost us. Now I'm not against the war in Iraq. I'm not against having Saddam Hussein in jail. I'm against incompetence. I'm against stupidity. And we got into this war in a stupid way. Our lack of preparation and planning meant that we have this awful occupation phase on our hands here. John McCain is a good friend of mine. We were classmates at the National War College, but if he thinks that this is a success for the Bush administration, he's wrong and I'm right.
It's clearly a difficult situation in Iraq, General McPeak. You're supporting John Kerry. Do you really think he's got a better plan for solving this problem? And if he does, why haven't we heard more of it?
Well, it's interesting to me, Tom. I take your point. You know, this is not a simple solution. Now, this mess is pretty comprehensive, so it's going to be hard to get out of there. And anybody who thinks there's an easy answer is a fool. John Kerry is no fool. So, as a matter of fact, I don't see much difference between the position that the Bush administration has now and Kerry's position. both of them, Kerry has said all along, we need to expand the alliance, increase international participation, share the cost and spread the responsibilities, sharply increase the training on domestic internal Iraqi security forces and so on. That's been a consistent Kerry position. The president and his group has moved towards Kerry, and so now there's little daylight between them. What the American people have to decide is, which of these two candidates can actually do this? If you think that George Bush can increase international participation in Iraq and stabilize the situation with the small amount of troops that he's put in there, then by all means, vote for Bush. But it looks to me like Bush is incapable of doing that, and our only real hope here is to change the administration, get Kerry in, and with, I agree, essentially the same set of ideas, but a real chance to execute on that ideas, then maybe we can work our way out of this mess.
Well, there's some kind of big choice being laid out here. We get your view of it, General McPeak. Thanks very much for joining us tonight.
You bet.
General Merrill McPeak, he was Air Force Chief of Staff during the first Gulf War. He voted and supported George W. Bush in 2000, has gone sour, as you can hear right there, on the war in Iraq. We are talking tonight about the Iraq factor in this season's presidential campaign from Madison Square Garden, where the Republicans are having a little bit of music right now from the stage. You can join the conversation tonight. Did John McCain and Rudy Giuliani speak to you when they applauded the Iraq War as the March of Liberty last night? And who's clearer on Iraq policy to you, George Bush or John Kerry? Is either candidate painting a clear road ahead, a clear path out? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here in the Garden, we've been joined tonight by Michael Hirsch, Newsweek's senior editor covering international affairs, and right now as well by David Frum. He's a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, a former Bush speechwriter. David Frum, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
David Frum, you've been an influential conservative voice. You brought the axis of evil phrase to the president's address and to the country and to the world. You've been a supporter of the war in Iraq. As you see this debate playing out here, you heard the kind of perspective we've got from General McPeak just now. You heard John McCain and Rudy Giuliani last night. You know what we're going to be hearing from the president and vice president later this week. How do you think this whole Iraq question is playing out politically in the United States right now?
Well, I think it plays out. It's an issue that's very much top of mind. Excuse me. I think you can see there's considerable anxiety in the country about it, that the country wants to do, is uncertain that it's going, that the war is going in the right direction and wants clear answers. It's an opportunity for John Kerry or for any opponent. The problem is that John Kerry, for a lot of reasons, has not taken advantage of this opportunity because people, the General McPeak's answer, which is, well, who knows, maybe Kerry would be better, is not really a compelling answer. Especially,
well, I don't think he said maybe. He said he believes he would be better.
Well, no, he didn't. He
said that they have a different strategy, but that Kerry was likely to carry it out.
He said he was. But there was a lot of sort of guesswork and hope in that. I think, actually, on the empirical matter, are Kerry's ideas similar to the president's? I think that's wrong. And I think that one of the things we're going to discover, one of the reasons that the Kerry campaign and the Kerry claim is sort of unraveling, is the things that Kerry says about Iraq don't stand up to a lot of scrutiny. The general said, will John Kerry do a better job than George Bush of getting allied troops into Iraq? Well, quite a lot of allied troops there, but he's talking principally about the major NATO powers, Germany in the first place, maybe France.
And maybe some Middle Eastern powers as well.
Now we go through, as the general would, the order of battle of the German army and say, well, if they wanted to send troops, how many could they send? And the answer is almost none. If the French wanted to send troops, how many could they send? Almost none. They haven't got the troops. Even with the best will in the world, they couldn't send the troops. Now, the French and Germans have already put it on record, their governments, we aren't coming. Even if John Kerry is president, we are locked into where we are. As for the major Middle Eastern powers, again, I mean, which is the Middle Eastern power with deployable forces that is reliable, that we can trust, by the way, to respect human rights? One of the big problems we would have in bringing a lot of troops from a place like, say, Pakistan, even if you could get them, which you couldn't, is I don't think Americans want to associate themselves with the Pakistani approach to counterinsurgency.
So it's a big problem. It's a big mess. No matter who wins in November, John Kerry has not made it entirely clear how he would...
I wouldn't say it's a big mess, but I would say...
I'm reading the news wires, okay. And there are some big problems over there.
Big problems,
by
no question.
Measure. But what about on the other side of this ledger? Kerry said, I'll take a different approach. At least I've got relationships. You point out that may not be so easy to deliver on. Gentleman Peake looks at the Bush record and says there is so much incompetence and stupidity here that this man deserves to be booted on the basis of the record in Iraq.
Well, the administration is not incompetent and it is not stupid. It has sometimes been surprised, as every administration in history in every country that has ever fought a war has sometimes been surprised. But I think there's... And this is where we get into the realm of ideas. The general saying is, look, don't worry. John Kerry is just as firm, just as dedicated to winning the war on terror as George Bush. And I have a hope that he may be able to get more from the French and the Germans. The truth of the matter is that John Kerry is a very different kind of person. He's got a lifelong record as the most dovish dove in the Senate. When people say he's the most liberal, it's not that he's always was the biggest writer of checks. He was not like a super free spender.
In fact, he wasn't. Was often pro-business.
Right, exactly. That's not where he gets those big liberal numbers. He was the most dovish member of the Senate. He finds the whole idea of American troops abroad using force to assert American interests deeply troubling. He's got a long record. It begins in 1971. It continues to this day. And I think it is just... If the general has persuaded himself that John Kerry is going to be staying the course in Iraq, I mean, he's obviously either a very persuasive salesman to himself or a very receptive listener to himself.
But
John Kerry will not persuade many other people of that.
Or may think that he just may be more effective one way or another in figuring out a way out of there, maybe even on that dovish impulse. Michael Hirsch, so here we've got it. You heard the speeches last night. This is the Republican presentation. They are going to present Iraq as valiant, as a success, as glorious, as visionary, and also out there is an acid critique of this war. You heard it from Gentleman Peake, and of course it's all over. You've even heard it from neocons at this point. Which do you think is carrying more political freight at this point?
Well, I mean, first let's make the point that this, you know, glossy patina that the Republican view of Iraq now has in as we've seen John McCain's speech, you know, just a short several months ago did not have that kind of a glow. I mean, even John McCain, as I know from reporting this in Washington, was a bitter critic of Donald Rumsfeld. McCain supported the war, but he felt for many months as the insurgency got out of control that Rumsfeld was in a state of denial, was not putting enough troops down. I think McCain has actually been vindicated. I mean, he's clearly, you know, gone back under the big tent, and, you know, he's become part of the fold again. As the election heats up, but there's no question that McCain himself was implicitly saying of the Bush administration, they botched the post-war situation.
So he may be conflicted, but he wasn't showing that last night.
Right.
In fact,
no.
He's wrapped it up in very, very laudatory colors.
Well, this is convention rhetoric, but again, I think the biggest problem here for Kerry is that he's kind of painted himself in a corner because he's already robbed himself of really the single most effective critique of Iraq, which was that it was never part of the war on terror. It was a disastrous distraction, the kind of thing that Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism director of the Bush administration, mm-hmm. indeed, even people like Rand Beers, Kerry's own national security advisor who worked for the Bush administration,
right.
People tend to forget, and resigned on this very issue, saying the move to Iraq was disastrously wrong. Kerry has taken that out of his, that arrow out of his quiver. So all he has left is to critique in some way how it's being conducted. And as David was suggesting, you know, there isn't a good concrete pledge of any kind. I'm going to do something different. In fact, his problem is that he keeps saying that he's going to get more help from allies, but that's a very delicate political problem. You don't want to be elected president of the United States by saying, well, you know, France or Germany
we're
is going to
throw
help
it off
us.
On France.
Exactly.
That may
so
not
it's
carry the day.
He's really kind of painted himself into a difficult corner where he doesn't have a very powerful critique left.
We are in Madison Square Garden tonight, live at the Republican National Convention, looking at the Iraq factor in this high political season. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. Donna is calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Donna. You're on the air.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
There's a couple things I want to point out that I think people lose sight of. You know, it's taken us over 200 years to get where we're at. And whether you agree with going into Iraq or not, it's still going to take a long time for that country in order to get its act together like it's taken us. And we're continuing to make modifications here in the States.
And so, you're saying give it time. How long, Donna? At what price? How big a price are you willing to pay?
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, I don't know if there's necessarily a time frame in order to solve the problems over Iraq. But, you know, Americans as a society, we have a tendency to be short-term thinkers. We have a tendency to forget important things, where the Europeans have a tendency to remember a lot longer because there's constant reminders.
And Donna, what about the critique? I've heard General McPeak and others make it that Iraq may be producing more terrorists than are being, you know, pushed out there. We're actually breeding a bigger problem.
Well, you know, at any time you're trying to make change, you're always going to have bigger issues that come up because people are going to take the opportunity to take advantage of a situation. But long term, if the path is still on course and the direction is still out in the open, eventually things will have a tendency to work out.
Our time's running down here before the break, but I want to thank you for calling in from Raleigh tonight. David Frum, Donna sounds like she's singing your song here. You've written about this. You've written speeches about it. This is kind of the, we will make Iraq a model. We will remake the Middle East and maybe one day the world. It's a very big vision. Is your confidence still high? Francis Fukuyama's bolting a bit here.
Well, my confidence was always moderately high. It always comes down to a question of alternatives. You know, when John Kerry supporters criticize various things that were done, and look, you know, you can look at any American war and go back through all of them, and when you find the one that doesn't have mistakes in it, you know, write a book about that.
And yet, when they are critiqued, they are critiqued, and some have been better pulled off than others.
Okay, but John Kerry is not running for pundit-in-chief. He is not running for military historian-in-chief. He is running for the job of president. In other words, he wants to lead the country going forward. There is a stark choice in Iraq, and that choice is, will the United States do what is necessary to win? It can win. Most military people believe that is possible, that in fact, likely, if the United States does what's necessary. Or will he try to get out as quickly as possible and on the best terms he can get? And he's already made his answer to that question clear. He's going to start withdrawing American troops within 6 months, regardless of the situation. That means he's prepared to accept defeat in preference to a commitment.
Well, there's an interpretation of what he said. When you say if they do what's necessary, just a few seconds before the break, but the Marines withdrawal from Fallujah, the current settlement in Najaf, are these doing the necessary, or do you think the U.S. should be tougher?
I think Najaf, the United States has done the right thing. I think Fallujah has been a big misjudgment, and I don't know that I can quite comprehend how the United States got itself into that position. And Najaf, I think, has been a success for the United States. That
whack-a-mole with Muqtada al-Sadr as Bob Krugman has it today?
What we are doing is drawing the single most important and influential person in Iraq, the Ayatollah Sistani, into a closer and closer relationship with the United States by forcing him to understand that his interests and America's interests line up and that Muqtada al-Sadr wants his job.
David Frum, Michael Hirsch, please stand by. We are talking tonight about the Iraq factor in this political season. We're live at Madison Square Garden. Lots more speakers coming up here tonight. We'll bring them to you as they hit the podium. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you hear the Iraq war being honestly described in New York this week? Is Iraq beating back terrorism or breeding more of it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, to you live from New York City in Madison Square Garden. The Republican National Convention is underway here tonight. Later tonight, Arnold Schwarzenegger will take the podium. Laura Bush. The theme of the night is officially compassion, and the banners are big to exactly that effect in the hall. We are talking tonight, as the convention rolls on, about the Iraq factor, the long shadow of Iraq in this presidential campaign season, shadow over the Republican National Convention, over the entire electorate as Americans move toward the polls. We've been joined tonight by Michael Hirsch, senior editor covering international affairs at Newsweek magazine. David Frum is with us as well, former Bush speechwriter, now a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. We're joined right now from Princeton, New Jersey, by Frank Newport. He's editor-in-chief of the Gallup Poll. Frank, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
I hope you can take us into the numbers a little bit about how Iraq specifically is playing with the electorate, Frank.
Well, we're actually seeing a slight improvement in the sense that more Americans are positive than they have been. It's not major. We had seen in May a pretty sharp increase in negativity, well over a majority, not well over, but 4 or 5 points over a majority began to say it was a mistake. But as I've been tracking our polls over the last 3 or 4 times we've been in the field and asked these questions, we're getting a slight increase in Americans saying it was not a mistake, and also a slight increase in Americans saying that it was worth it for the U.S. to get involved. On top of that, we now have Bush ahead by 6 points of Kerry when we say who could better handle the situation in Iraq. So I put all of that together and I say, we are seeing a slight tilt towards what the Republican side of the issue.
And what's your most recent polling dates? This must precede everything we've heard in New York this week.
Oh, yeah. We don't have any polling data from last night, of course. Our last poll was through on the 25th of August, just last week, essentially.
Do you have a sense of the texture of the thinking that's leading people to these answers, Frank, and how the message that's going out of New York might play in that, might bolster that support for the president on Iraq or otherwise?
Well, Kerry picked up some after the Democratic convention in terms of being able to handle Iraq, perhaps because he was, seen as the Vietnam person. And, of course, I think whether or not that was a swift vote edge or whether or not simply the erosion of time, as I just mentioned, that's left, and we've now had a flip where Bush is back on top. I think, in my own opinion, that a lot of Iraq is driven by what people see and hear in the media, not what they're going to be hearing in the convention or what the candidates say. It's news coverage. And in my opinion, there's been less news coverage of Iraq, perhaps, in recent weeks, or at least it's not been as much on the front page, and some of that's probably leading people to be a little more positive.
It's been a hard story to cover. It's been something big to talk about, though, here at the Republican Convention. Frank Newport, thanks for joining us with the poll numbers on the Iraq front.
My pleasure.
Frank, it's great to have you. Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of the Gallup Poll. Let's turn to our callers. Stan is calling from Sacramento, California. Hi, Stan. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great, thanks.
First-time caller. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Okay, first of all, I'm against the Iraq war. I don't believe that we should have gone in. I don't believe basically in starting wars.
And who's speaking to you right now, since the country is in there, as the candidate with the solution?
Well, unfortunately we're in Iraq, and we need to try to figure out what we can do to get out of there the best way we can. But the biggest problem that I see is, why didn't we go in and take care of the original problem? I'm 47 years old now, and when the World Trade Center was attacked, I was ready to go sign up. But the more I heard the reports over there, what was going on in the Afghanistan war, how we weren't putting troops down, how we didn't get bin Laden, it made me pretty upset, because all we're doing is we're setting up to have a 20-year war. And I don't think we need to do that. If we would have gone into Afghanistan, taken care of business, we wouldn't have any problems anymore. We'd be setting a precedent.
Stan, we've got it. You're saying the war wasn't the way to deal with what we saw on 9/11. Thanks for your call from Sacramento. We're joined now here at Madison Square Garden by William Harrop, ambassador to Israel, appointed by George Bush the Senior. He was an ambassador to 4 African countries under Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, Inspector General of the State Department and Foreign Service, appointed by Ronald Reagan, former U.S. Marine Corps Korean War veteran. William Harrop, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Let's just pick up on what Stan in California just said, that he was ready to sign up for the military after 9/11. But he doesn't think that American armed forces have been used effectively in the war in Iraq. What's your view?
Well, I think he's right. I think we had not finished the operation in Afghanistan. We had the support of our allies, of NATO, to work there. But while we were half done there, we invaded Iraq, which really was no threat to us at all. It was a diversion from the war against terrorism. And instead of putting more resources into Afghanistan and going after bin Laden there and doing the job, we diverted 140,000 troops to Iraq. And we have, in fact, wasted our efforts there. We've endangered. We've lost almost 1,000 young Americans. And it was a really very unfortunate mistake.
So how do you interpret, Bill Harrop, what the polls are showing? That you got the Gallup poll saying that Americans right now say Bush is more likely to effectively handle the situation in Iraq by 6 points. I mean, you know, it's not huge, but still, in spite of everything you've just described, what's your interpretation of that? How does that view get formed?
I think it's because of very clever publicity and clever campaigning by Karl Rove and the president and the vice president and others of the Republican team to lead the people of the United States, the voters, to believe that we are safer after the Iraq war than we were before. The fact of the matter is we are much more exposed. We have created terrorism in Iraq, which did not exist before, and we have diverted our resources, as I mentioned a moment ago, from going after terrorism. We are now bogged down in both Afghanistan and Iraq. We should have three times as many forces in Afghanistan, and we should have gone into Iraq in such a way as to get our allies to support us there and not to do it all on our own.
David Frum, here's a voice of one man experienced in the military and in the Middle East and fairly well expressing the critical view of Iraq, that it was a diversion, that it's bleeding the country now and not leading to a solution of terrorism, just the opposite of what we heard last night, pretty much the opposite of what we've heard from you this evening.
Well, let's take up the two substantive points that the ambassador makes. The first is the one about Afghanistan. I don't know that the United States would be doing a whole heck of a lot better in Afghanistan if it had 50, 60, 80,000 troops patrolling through the hills and mountains. The reason that bin Laden was able to get away was because on the day after 9/11, and by the way, this is a point that has been made by critics of the president as well as by supporters, that in all the years that bin Laden was building up his strength inside Afghanistan, the United States did not make a coherent plan at that time to take action. So when
I thought a big reason was that it was Afghan forces that were deployed around Tora Bora and Osama bin Laden snuck away in the night. Could have used more forces there, I guess.
He had 2 months to get away. September 11th occurs, of course, on the 11th of September. The American air campaign begins a month later. American ground forces arrive 2 months later.
So you're suggesting that American forces, American power generally, is optimally deployed as we stand now?
No, what I'm saying is that the cause of the problem with bin Laden was that the United States had not taken the problem of terrorism seriously in such a way. The ideal time to respond to bin Laden would have been on September the 10th. Preemptively. Now, that's a controversial word, but that would have been the best way. The second way is to arrive really, really fast after 9/11.
You seem to be ducking the Iraq critique, though.
No, I said that. Okay. I want to deal with both substantive points. And the first one is that the reason that the United States did not find bin Laden was because there weren't enough troops. I would say it's because the troops did not arrive quickly enough, and that goes to planning failures in the years before. I'm not sure the ambassador would disagree with that.
So you're saying this was Clinton's failures and forward going?
I would say I'm not naming anybody. I think there's enough. On terrorism, there's enough failure for everybody.
I want to go to the floor of the hall for just a moment to hear from Senator Sam Brownback from Kansas. Michael Hirsch, I see you're eager to get in here, but let's listen to the senator for a moment.
President Bush has marshaled an army of compassion to combat this disease. His emergency plan for HIV/AIDS, malaria, and TB authorized a record $15 billion, which will treat 2 million people, prevent 7 million new infections, and care for 10 million orphans and others affected by AIDS. Under President Bush's leadership, we will work to protect every human life.
Kansas Republican Senator Sam Brownback at the podium right now talking about President Bush's AIDS program globally. Michael Hirsch, you hear this debate unfolding right here. Americans have to make a decision out of this. It is a very confusing decision to make. The reporting from Iraq has at times been sketchy. Reporters unable to get to all corners of the country. And such opposite views of what should have been done, what's being done.
Well, I mean, unfortunately for the electorate, this is not the debate that's occurring for reasons that we've already said. Kerry is simply not giving voice to the ambassador's critique, the critique made by others like Richard Clark, that this was an enormous and catastrophic distraction going into Iraq.
Why not? Why not that point from John Kerry?
I think there are a lot of questions that, you know, you have to ask Kerry. I think Democrats, I think he's trying to play it safe to some degree, as he was. I mean, this was the Howard Dean critique. This is what got the Democratic base excited.
Loud, clear, and angry.
About Howard Dean. All collectively, the Democrats decided at one point that Kerry and only Kerry was electable, but Kerry has always been cautious on this issue. I mean, I have to answer David Frum in saying, I mean, I've been to Afghanistan. I've reported out the story. There's absolutely no question that troops, there were not enough troops, there were not enough resources. There was a diversion of resources, intelligence and military and otherwise, very early in 2002 as we turned toward Iraq. And this all goes back to the president's desk. I mean, this is, unfortunately, a debate that simply is not occurring because the Democratic Party is not taking up that banner any longer, as it was with Howard Dean running.
We'll hear more from David Frum and Bill Harrop on that front. But first, let's go to Jeff calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Good evening. Well, wonderfully thought-provoking show.
Thanks, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Well, I hope to offer a different perspective here. I initially did not support President Bush in his election. And as a major in the military, I did not support our deployment. I just returned for 14 months of boots on the ground in Iraq.
Which service, Jeff? Which service are you in?
I'm an Army reservist. We're in the civil affairs branch. We were responsible for restoring the governments and essential services from everything from Fallujah to Najaf.
Okay. And what did you come back thinking from that boots on the ground time?
Well, I got to tell you, as I said, I did not support leaving my family of three for the fourth time over the last 12 years, nor did I. I guess the bottom line is from being on the ground and seeing the children coming to the end of the driveways, to seeing the people restoring their hope and their optimism, to restoring their electricity in the towns that hadn't had it for 30 years, clean water. Our unit was responsible for over 900 schools. The thanks of the common man and what we're doing there, which is not being portrayed since I've been home, I've witnessed that. I can see why many of the people have the opinions they do on your program, because that what is happening on the ground is not being portrayed.
Jeff, let me ask you, when did you leave Iraq?
I returned April 22nd back here to the United States, so I've had 4 months.
All right, so just four months back. It's a fascinating and valuable perspective. Thanks for calling in with it. Let me put it to William Harrop. Here's a soldier back from Iraq, says his firsthand experience is gratitude from Iraqis. Happier Iraqi children is going to support President Bush on it.
Well, I think individuals who are working with villagers, working to provide water, working to help the sanitary situation and so on, certainly must have had, I would not argue for a moment, must have had gratitude for the Iraqis. The country as a whole cannot help but regard the United States as an occupying force. That's all there is to it. We're looked at in Iraq very much the way the Soviets were looked at in Afghanistan in the 1970s. We're looked at as occupiers. People don't like to be occupied, whether they're Palestinians or whether they're Iraqis, whether they're Americans. If we had other forces here claiming to fix up our government and to help us out, we wouldn't like that. We don't like to be occupied.
Is there any bigger issue in this campaign, William Harrop, than Iraq?
Well, the economy, of course, is important, but I think Iraq is the most important because Iraq shows the nature of the leadership of the commander-in-chief of the United States. It shows his capabilities, the way his mind works, the way he looks at the world, the way he thinks about leading an alliance of nations, the way he works with allies or does not work with allies, the way he works the United Nations or scorns the United Nations. We're not going to solve the problems of the world without the United States as the only superpower providing the lead. You can't provide the lead if you are not credible, if you are not respected, if your values have lost the kind of esteem they used to have. And that's what this administration has done to the United States. I agree completely with Mr. Frum that we should have gone in with more forces earlier on into Afghanistan. Absolutely right. That's a true thing. But the fact is we didn't. And now that does not, I think, excuse the diversion, which I think was a dreadful diversion of our interests to Iraq.
Well, it is a huge engagement. I'm afraid we're out of time with that. You can hear from the floor tonight. It's not only Compassion Night at the Republican National Convention. It is Hispanic Night, I guess, with George P. Bush speaking Spanish right now. Jackie Velasquez performing on the floor of the Republican National Convention. David Frum, thanks so much for being with us tonight with your perspective. David Frum, former Bush speechwriter and now fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. William Harrop, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Glad to be here.
William Harrop, appointee of Ronald Reagan, George Bush I, and former ambassador to Israel and a number of other countries. Michael Hirsch with Newsweek, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Sure.
This is Tom Ashbrook live at the Republican National Convention in New York. Thanks for joining us.
This is WBUR.